I just can't have any social life right now.
Don't worry about it. We're just having coffee. We'll be antisocial.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of A Damn Fine Espresso. I'm joined here today by Matt and Alan to talk about the newest Indiana Jones episode. Hi, Matt.
Hello.
And hi, Alan.
Hello.
And listeners of our podcast might remember that just in our last episode, we talked about the Indiana Jones series as a whole. We talked about favorites. We talked about the trilogy of the 1980s and then number four, the 2008 sequel, The Crystal Skull. And I think what came out most of our conversation, if I remember correctly, was that we made a big difference between the original three and the very last one, The Crystal Skull, in 2008. So I wanted to start off our conversation about the newest Indiana Jones with just that basic question. So is the newest episode better or worse than number four? And for a quick judgment, I'll start you with Alan, because I remember you said mostly about number four, what you remember is that there was always a kind of floating through peril in some kind of vehicle, but they never got to explore the set pieces and the interesting ideas. So how did you feel about number five?
I did enjoy it. I think it helped going in with the low expectations set by number four. And I do think I had sort of very specific problems with Crystal Skull that felt like they'd listened to me. And they were at least attempting to address them with this film. So that notion that the characters would be in sequences where they felt like they were in peril. I genuinely felt that with this film. And also that they were interesting characters and the nature of their character was part of the story, rather than just a collection of interesting characters who float along with no interaction and doing nothing. This had quite interesting characters and what they did related to who they were. And this is like the basics of storytelling. And I think like they finally got slightly above that bar in a way they didn't with Crystal Skull. And for that, I think I did enjoy it.
Nice. So a low bar met basically for you. Matt, would you agree as we take this first comparison?
I wish I did, but I can't really. I mean, perhaps my problem was that I read a couple of reviews, I listened to a couple of reviews, and I listened to what Mark Kermode said, and most people said they were surprised at how not shit it is. So I went in possibly with expectations of something I would at least enjoy a bit, and I have to say that I didn't, but in ways that are quite different from Crystal Skull. I think Crystal Skull is a worse movie, but it has that Spielberg flair in some ways. You know, Spielberg knows how to do a set piece. Spielberg knows how to set a scene. And even if it's done to stupid effect because the plot is dumb and everything that Alan said basically is true, there was still a certain flair there. And I think James Mangold, he's done good films. He's done okay films, but he does not have much flair. And I think this film really lacks the flair. So every single scene made me think of scenes in the earlier films that were just better, that were more interesting, that had more drive, that had more dynamism. This one just, it felt old, and it wanted to feel old because it was also consciously a story about old Indy, but it just didn't do much with that. It tried to, but in the end, I just kept thinking, why did they have to make this film other than, hey, we can make some more money?
Interesting. So expectations really play a huge role, I think. Mm-hmm. In my case, I read mostly bad reviews, and there was just one wee friend I have who I normally trust in his judgment, and he said he really enjoyed it. So I went with very mixed feelings, expecting kind of hopefully something better than number four, and I did think I enjoyed it quite a bit more than Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I did enjoy the fact that they took this old indie idea, but they also played around with the different levels of him being younger in the opening sequence, but then showing the truly older Indiana Jones and really having him play out the age aspect as well in different ways. And I do agree that it was mostly for nostalgic reasons that I enjoyed a large part of the film. There was nothing really new added to it, or the aspects that I enjoyed were also part of the older movies, especially Raiders of the Lost Ark and The Last Crusade. But as a whole, I surprisingly enjoyed the whole thing, with maybe the exception of the last little bit. But I think we'll talk about that in a later conversation. There is, again, a third act issue, I think, that everybody who's read reviews been talking and reading about. So generally, because of the low expectations, I think, no, this is rather good. It has a lot of promising aspect, including some characters that were introduced and were not just used as character effects, but were actually explored to some extent and made sense. I'm thinking of Phoebe Waller-Bridge as the kind of second main character, which I thought worked really well.
I'd agree with that in the sense that what was lacking in Crystal Skull was they introduce Indy Sun and do nothing with it. There's no usage of that to suggest a generational thing, to have the characters interact in relation to, you know, you're an old man, I'm the future, no you're not. All these dynamics that I think happen a bit in this film. You know, it's just the basic low bar. You sort of, with Crystal Skull, you think they've introduced a son. There's stuff you can play with here that they just seem to ignore. And in this, they do something with it. And it's nothing earth-shattering what they do. So again, we're talking about the low bar. But the fact that they do something, it does feel like, you know, they had a list of what went wrong with Crystal Skull. And they went through and, you know, there's a young person interacting with Indy. Tick. But we'll do it better this time. It's our second stab at it. And so I think throughout the film, it was just that thing of like, this is better. This is a very similar kind of film. And it just feels like slightly more coherent, especially, I think, on that aging point. I mean, this is unquestionably a film that this has old Indiana throughout. Whereas I think with Crystal Skull as well, they sort of play that he's a bit of an old man. And then they go, okay, old man, now run past all these traps that are going to go, as I mentioned previously, they're going to go conspicuously slower than they used to. But this just always felt like it's an older man. It's an old man. It's the struggles of an old man. And at least it's the same idea. They're just doing it better.
I would agree with all of that. The problem is it doesn't work for me because they don't do it well enough. I think for me the thing is really that, you know, James Mangold, he also did Logan, which was basically Wolverine from the X-Men having gotten old. And I think that film did that much better. It did this kind of, it thematically had something to say about, you know, these characters getting old, perhaps us having gotten old with them, and obsolescence and all of that. And I think Dial of Destiny, it plays with that, but in the end, it is still a very traditional Indiana Jones film with all the set pieces that we expect. So we get scenes where Indy is old. He's basically riding in a horse rather than running. He's punching a bit less than he used to, but we still get him doing the same stuff. We still get the same kind of challenges. So it felt like the film, it wanted to be a classic Indiana Jones adventure while acknowledging that he's old. But I think if you want to really tell a story about an old Indiana Jones, you have to tell a different story. But that story is not one that lends itself to summer blockbusters. Mm. And in that respect, I think it's the beginning, not the beginning of the film, but the beginning of the present time bit with old Indy in the 60s and the very ending where I felt this is a story about a man who's gotten old. In between, it's a story about Indiana Jones who just happens to be old.
That's true. I felt also that these New York scenes at the beginning and at the end, those were the ones where I felt his character was most successful. Then obviously the adventure bit starts. And I also felt this was kind of ticking off things that they wanted to do, maybe had missed in Crystal Skull. And everyone was hoping for someone to bring Nazi villains back in some way. And I think that was a big item on their list. And then there was that introducing new characters that would be made more, maybe more the dynamic ones, while at the same time, of course, reintroducing or having again some of the classic characters. I'm thinking of John Rhys-Davies and, of course, Marianne coming in. There's a reference to his son, which I thought was rather lovely, that there he is part of the story, but he's part of Indy's tragedy as an older man, and later explains why he's become such a curmudgeon, kind of a Gran Torino type of character. You know, I thought that was rather cleverly done.
But I also think, I mean, maybe this is just me sort of trying to create a canon that I'm more happy with, is that, I mean, this film kind of references Crystal Skull, but I think you could also still ignore it. So if you took this as like a film that there's the original trilogy and then someone comes back now and says, right, Indy's old. The Indy from the trilogy is old. Let's go to where his character is now.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you need for the character in this film is given. You don't need to have seen Crystal Skull. And to be honest, I think if you think the background to the Indiana Jones of film 5, if you ignore Crystal Skull, you've got this idea that, you know, maybe not long after Last Crusade, he got together with Marion, that it was a happy marriage. They had a kid, and it's the kid dying in Vietnam that sort of is in danger of breaking them up. That's a much happier story that I like more than what Crystal Skull played with, where we met the son, to be honest, no great loss to the world that he's gone. And there was the sort of affection between the two is already quite warped. And you have this sort of breakup. You had the sort of marriage at the end of Crystal Skull that felt fake to me. It didn't feel earned. I really didn't feel moved by that at all. In contrast, I think there's Marion and Indiana stuff in this that I did feel that had a warmth to it. And I think it's because it feels this is the character coming back from the first film rather than this is another add-on to what we saw as Crystal Skull.
Mm-hmm. 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 And I think what works well for me, if we think of the basic elements that need to be there in a movie for me to be convinced by, besides Harrison Ford, who I think does a great job as the old Indy, but he is the old Indy. I think the introduction of three key characters was important for me. I was very curious about Phoebe Waller-Bridge as Helena, his goddaughter that shows up after many years and kind of sets the plot in motion, the whole dial of destiny thing. She's very much a driving force. I enjoyed that. And the big part she had in the film, I thought she was very good. And I think the story, the backstory with her dad that we see, Toby Jones, as his ally in the Nazi scene, 1944, also worked well. And the fact that he was so into the dial of destiny that we see this element already coming up, and by his ideas and notes that then the plot drives forward, I think that worked for me. And I think it had a good villain. I think Mads Mikkelsen as the Nazi who comes back from the past, I thought was successful, even though, you know, some of the plot turns out to be rather preposterous. But he was an imposing figure. He was an imposing presence in the film. And I felt, you know, if you have a key ally, a key partner, and a key villain that work out well, there's a lot that is already there that I felt I went along with and I started to enjoy things. But I was curious, of course, to see where the plot would go, where the journey would take Indiana Jones and his allies. And there's a couple of things that, of course, we need to talk about. But I think the key elements for me were in place.
I think that's the thing for me, that I would agree with you that, you know, these people did a good job, but I think that the script just needed more work. I mean, I do think that there was a lot of potential in the Phoebe Waller-Bridge character, but I feel that it didn't, you know, thinking back, for instance, to Raiders, where you've got a fantastic dynamic between Indy and Marion, you needed that kind of writing. You needed much snappier writing, and you needed a clearer idea of what it wanted to do thematically. You know, the kind of generational thing, that perhaps the Phoebe Waller-Bridge character is now the actual Indy, and the Indy is much more like his dad. It was there, kind of in an embryonic form, but it was not really worked out in a way that would have been sharp and snappy for me. So to me, it felt like a kind of a bungled chance to some extent. Same with Mads Mikkelsen. He was very enjoyable because it's Mads Mikkelsen. He is engaging. He's enjoyable. But I also felt that that character was weirdly underwritten. Like, for instance, Indy keeps saying, you know, he's a Nazi. And obviously he's a Nazi. We know that. But we don't know much about his motivation. We don't know much about his personality, other than he's polite to everyone, even to characters that Nazis traditionally are not nice to. So it just felt like they had an idea, but they didn't really work that one out either. And for me, it was the same with Toby Jones. I'm a big fan of Toby Jones usually, but I felt also there was just the idea there, but they didn't put in the legwork to some extent for me. You know, I didn't feel like this character was really developing. I didn't feel like we really got to see his obsession with the Dial of Destiny. So to me, it felt like we were being told a lot of things, but we weren't really shown them to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least, I mean, as I said, I would not blame any of the actors here. I do think that they did as well as they could. But I think the script really needed more work to you know, really develop these things, because the potential was there. But for me, almost always, that potential just, the film fell short of that potential.
And I think, going back to, I suppose, the sort of glass half full or half empty, I think a lot of that is true. And I think my yardstick is a little bit John Hurt's character in Crystal Skull, who's the professor who's had his mind broken. And then Toby Jones's version of that character in this, it is better. You see him being friends with Indy. I did like the scene where you have a sort of scene talked about the last time they'd met and the argument they had. And then you see it. And I really enjoyed that scene. That felt like, okay, this does set up a lot of this film. And I agree with you on the point that it is also underwritten. So I think I'm enjoying it more again because of the Crystal Skull effect. I'm just like, it's better than that. And I'm appreciating it for being better.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally see that. Absolutely.
I also see the point about writing. There were two things that I was reminded about. Phoebe Waller-Bridge, I know her mostly from Fleabag. And of course, there you have this extremely sharp writing. Her dialogue is so to the point. And I thought it was a mild version of that. And it's probably because I assume Phoebe Waller-Bridge did not write her dialogue in Indiana Jones, or not to my knowledge. I'd have to maybe look into the details of writing, but I didn't see her in the writing credits. So I felt, yeah, there was a bit of a potential loss there. Still enjoyed her enough. And I did feel throughout the film that parts were missing. And I felt with the Toby Jones character, maybe there was more material that they had filmed, but that wasn't used. I found that most striking with Antonio Banderas' character. He is pretty much not in the film.
Mm.
And he was hailed as this big star name, at least for European cinema goers. Ah, Antonio Banderas is in the new Indiana Jones. And then there's this scene where they drive to the boat and, you know, my old friend Ronaldo, there's not even a bit of dialogue. And only a few minutes later do you actually see Antonio Banderas. So I did feel some of the film might have been lost on the cutting room floor, that there was probably more material.
I have to confess, I saw his name in the end credits and had to look up. So I didn't spot him in the film. I was just like, he was in this film, and I had to sort of like, you know, I think because mentally, probably I still have a mental image of him from the 1990s. So I have to update to the older man. So I was sort of, I don't remember a like hot young Spaniard in this film.
From the Almodóvar days. Maybe that was an issue of the writing process. Probably lots more ideas, and then in the end they focused. I had the impression they focused a lot on chases and action set pieces, and maybe that's one other thing to talk about in comparison to Crystal Skull. How did you feel about the action scenes? Because I felt there were ample chances for chases. I'm thinking of the parade in New York City. I'm thinking of the tuk-tuk chase, of course, then also the ending, the exploring of the caves in the last act. So how do you feel about the feel of the action? Because I feel when I watch Raiders, when I watch especially The Last Crusade, one thing that sticks out is that the chases with tanks and cars are amazing, and you're really in the middle of the action. How did you feel about that aspect in Indy 5?
Kind of like the one with the tuk-tuks. I think that one, even though it was probably the slowest in terms of real speed, that one had some kind of dynamism. I think that one got exciting, even though it was too long. It could easily have been shortened by 50%. Other than that, most of them felt a bit pedestrian. Again, that's where I would basically go back to Spielberg. Young Spielberg was fantastic. I mean, Raiders has, I think, some of the best set pieces for this kind of film that you can do, that can just not be topped. And not because they're big, but because they're really well directed and shot and edited. I think the scenes here, they work, but they are never more than okay, or they were never more than okay for me. And also, you know, for instance, the beginning with the train and everything, I just kept thinking back to, for instance, Last Crusade, where we also have an action set piece on a train. The one in Dial of Destiny, to me, felt twice as long. I mean, I recently watched John Wick 4, where I thought, you know, this would have been a great 90-minute film. I really dislike it as a 3-hour film. Here, I didn't feel as strongly about it, but I still felt, you know, take all the action sequences, cut them down to 2/3 or half of the length, and they would have been better.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think where this works is if you go into an action sequence, I think, with a lot of blockbuster films, because you're already there thinking, yeah, I know the good guys are going to win. You know, whatever the action adventure here, ultimately, the adventure and the action is going to lead with the good guys triumphing. So there's an element to which, like, well, how can you make this sort of narratively interesting? How can you put the characters in a position where, you know, I know Indiana Jones is not going to be accidentally decapitated by a train tunnel. I know that's not going to happen. But I don't entirely know how he might come out of this. So if they're chasing something, he might come out of this separated from the people he's adventuring with, or he might come out of it without the item he's after, or he might come out of it with the item he's after, and then he's being chased. And this sort of quite simple action-adventure sort of narrative thing, I think this film does quite well. Again, in contrast to Crystal Skull, where they just didn't bother with it at all. But then they said, well, we've got that part of this chase. We've got actually that it's progressing a little bit, the narrative, and you've got different people in this chase with different reasons for being in it and what they're after out of it. And then it's too long. Oh, but also on top of that, we better have three or four set pieces, one of which it directly references something in an earlier film for the fans, and we'll do another because we've got the budget to do this now. And yeah, they felt to, they're good action sequences, but you did feel they don't have to be this long. You're sort of overindulging in them. You've got the characters at the beginning. You know where they're going to come out of it at the other end. You've done that sort of work narratively. Get them there.
Mm-hmm.
And don't spend so long, because it's not, I think, again, the direction, it's not Spielberg. You've not got enough wow in this direction to make, okay, this sequence is going to be 10 minutes long. No one in the cinema is going to be wowed for those 10 minutes. It's not going to have that capacity to like, we can justify just doing this action sequence because you'll be amazed by it. It's kind of like, I've kind of seen this before, and fair enough, it's being done well. But yeah, it felt far too long for me.
Mm-hmm. I agree, the length was an issue for me too. I did enjoy the ideas for the action set pieces. I mean, you know, the train in World War II, that scene, I was very much looking forward to that. I did think that they reveled for too long, probably in the New York parade. There's a lot of detail about aspects of the parade and Indigo that and that way, and eventually down into the subway as well. And the same for the tuk-tuk. The dynamic was great. I enjoyed the fact that they also reintroduced a young actor to be part of this, you know, three-person dynamic versus the villains. I think that was okay. What I minded in Indiana Jones, especially compared to other blockbusters that are already out at the moment, is the sense of realism. I never quite felt that the actors were really in those action scenes. I felt that the green screening or whatever they used to project the backgrounds, in this case, often looked blurred and a little bit too overly artificial.
Mm-hmm.
I felt I was always taken out of these set pieces because I felt, oh, there's an insert of this, there's an insert of that. And of course, with Harrison Ford being in the middle of the scenes, I was wondering, you know, where was he part of that? What was filmed there? Where? What was actually filmed in Tangier? What was actually filmed? Well, I know it's not New York, it's Glasgow, but what did they actually film with the actors on the set, and what was produced later? That was a real issue for me. And I don't enjoy action these days unless I know it's for real. So that's why I love watching Bond, and obviously Mission Impossible, if we have to name it, because you kind of know the excitement is about, oh, they've really done that. And with Indy, I just didn't know, what have they really done?
I have to say that for me was also better than in Crystal Skull. Crystal yes. Skull definitely has this CGI sheen of, what is it, 10 years ago. And there was enough here that didn't make me think of, it's probably CGI. Because, I mean, looking back to the original films, there's also, you know, clear matte images, and there's clear blue screen, green screen, whatever work. There's, for instance, the scene with the plane in Indiana Jones 3. It doesn't look believable, but it's still engaging. So I don't mind the unreality as long as it doesn't have this kind of flatness that CGI has. But yeah, I would agree. It's the same with the de-aging, perhaps. I think it worked reasonably well, but they also insist on it so much that you think, we know that you can do this, you know, CGI magic these days. I have to say what bothered me more than the occasional moments where it looked kind of uncanny valley was hearing old Harrison Ford's voice coming out of youngish Indy's mouth.
Mm. Absolutely. I felt exactly the same. I thought, this is old Harrison Ford talking, clearly, if you know the old trilogy. Let's maybe take this into the last third of the film, because, of course, a key thing always is, how is this going to end? What's the... big revelation, what's the final challenge or the final challenges that Indy and his allies will have to face. And this one, of course, makes a bold step, let's say. We start off with going to Sicily, which I really enjoyed. I think the venturing into the cave to find Archimedes's tomb, I kind of like was pretty basic, and there were, you know, bridges and rivers and traps and so on. So I felt that was, you know, classic Indy. But then, of course, we are told that by the Dial of Destiny, we can find fissures in time, and by this we can escape and go to some desired point in time. And our villain wants to take us back to Nazi times to change the course of World War II. But instead, we land at the siege of Siracusa on Sicily. And we are time traveling with Indy, the Nazis, or the new Nazis, and his allies. So, I mean, how did you guys feel about this finale? Because it's much discussed these days. Is that ruining the film? Did you accept it? Did you go along with it? I don't know, Alan, how did you feel about it?
I loved it. I genuinely, it was an absolute high point in the film, partly because I didn't see it coming at all. I hadn't read about the film, so I had no idea where the ending would go. And there is something enjoyably over the top and pulpy when I suddenly realise they are doing this, and suddenly you have Nazis whose plan is to go back to kill Hitler and replace him, which is already a gloriously insane scheme. And their plane emerges on the siege of Syracuse, followed by another plane, and they're suddenly above it. I absolutely relished it. It was very much one of the highlights of watching it, was that it went there. It did that. I think it's a bit of a shame that almost they don't do a huge amount when they get the characters there. So I think the demise mm-hmm. of the Nazis being just a plane crash is a bit disappointing. I don't really want to suggest a film that already is probably too long should have an extra act, but I think if you're going to go there, let's have Mads maybe scheming, getting into Syracuse and maybe scheming with the Romans while Indy goes to help the Greeks. You know, just that moment where you realize it's going to happen. And I think to some extent in execution, I enjoyed it tremendously.
By the expression on your face, Matt, I'm really not sure what your response is going to be. I'm guessing you didn't.
I did not enjoy it. I have to say, it totally took me out of it. At that point, I just felt, okay, now they're... I mean, all the Indiana Joneses have otherworldly stuff happening. They've got kind of genre fiction stuff happening, magic, you know, power of God, aliens in the last one. And it just felt like, you know, one step too far. At this point, you know, anything can happen. The aliens from, I don't know, Close Encounters of the Third Kind might come and abduct Indy, or he might end up in, I don't know, Roger Rabbit. It just felt random. I have to say, it's not the execution here. It's more that the world that the films that I like set up was one where you've got, you know, this kind of Hollywood pulp realism. Obviously, it's not realistic, but it's a real-ish world. And the fantastic that comes from basically mythology, folklore, legend. And that is a mix that works for me. I would even say that the aliens in 4 didn't completely ruin it for me, because you could say it's still basically, it's a pulp cliche that they're using, that they're playing with. But here it just felt like, you know, okay, now they're traveling in time. Anything could happen, and therefore it doesn't matter what does happen. I think it's not badly done. It could have been cheesy, and it wasn't cheesy, but it's not something that works for me for an Indiana Jones film. But I think that's the problem there, is really that I love the first one, I like the third one, and those set the parameters for me. And this one basically used different parameters. If it had been a standalone film, you know, a bit like, what was that called? The Philadelphia Project, where I think they also go back in time from the 80s to the 40s to something, something World War II. As a standalone film, I might have accepted that. But just in an Indiana Jones film, that's not the kind of thing I want or need to happen.
Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure how consequential it was also as an ending, because when they mentioned the fact that Mads Mikkelsen wants to go back to kill Hitler, I was kind of cheering on the inside. I thought, yes, we're going to go back to World War II. We're going to maybe have a re-encounter with Hitler as we had in The Last Crusade, and maybe it's going to tie up this kind of atmosphere. Also, because they started out with Germany in 1944, I thought that would have been a cool ending. When the Siege of Syracuse happened, I had this, I think, a similarly anarchic feeling like you, Alan. I really thought, wow, okay, they're going bold. I was curious, of course, to see how they did the reenactment, because I was in Syracuse last year and I read a lot about the siege, and I wanted to see what they had done with the material, the city, how it's shown. I was quite amazed to see it. I did enjoy it also when they were shot at with all these arrows and ancient weapons and had to land or crash landed. But of course, yeah, I mean, when you do that, better do something with it afterwards. It felt a bit odd just to have that meeting between Indy and Archimedes and then that's it. And then he's punched out and wakes up again in New York, 1969.
And you have a sort of feeling of sort of truncated script writing there as well, because he's gone to the past. And I really liked it in the sense that you've got this character who deals with antiquities arriving in antiquity. That feels quite an exciting thing to play with. But of course, he's landed in a war zone. He's landed in a horrible place. And he goes, oh, can I stay here? And I didn't buy that. You almost, like I said, have an act there that ends with them happily, I don't know, celebrating somehow or something. And then have him going. I mean, it's turning into a sort of like little bit of time bandits now, but have him then decide, I want to stay here. I'm in the world where myths and antiquities are around us. And then have the notion that, like, no, actually, you do have something for you in your life back in the 60s. But because they have to compress that, him saying, leave me here in a war zone with this weird guy who seems might be friendly, but he's got a couple of armed people with him just staring at him weirdly. There's no bonding. There's no reason, like, you think, oh, they've become friends, so he might stay for this person. And I think that sort of felt like that is from an earlier draft where maybe the sequence was longer and they truncate it in. And so Indiana Jones saying, oh, I want to stay here. Show me the reasons why he wants to stay there. It felt sort of a bit contrived, and it felt, yeah, again, like it was a great idea. Maybe more time there would have really helped the film.
Mm-hmm. And having just seen Back to the Future, I know, the week before, of course, everything that deals with changing the past, not to mess with the future, somewhat done in that way, in that short, truncated way, also felt kind of cheap and not really thought through. But it did kind of like the boldness of the finale. I thought, okay, yeah, they did something massive. They bring it back to 1969. I think it's a charming ending. And bringing Marion in at the end is also, you know, ties up a few loose ends, including Crystal Skull. And I did feel, yeah, okay, they went into fantasy world.
I mean, I was there. I was sort of willing it to happen sometimes when you're in the cinema that, like, you know, Marion comes in. And I really did rate that scene. I didn't. But when everyone leaves them in the room together, I wanted the two of them to go, let's travel back in time again. Like, they've acted like old people being reconciled, and everyone goes, right, we're off to get ice cream. And then suddenly it's just like, I want something in their eye that, a bit more twinkly, that is like, you know what? Mm-hmm. We can still adventure together. And instead, I mean, it was quite a sweet scene, but I wanted, like, the Marion I like is a Marion that if Indy says, I've got a device that can take us back in time, she's going to want to go back in time. And I was willing at the end, and the final fade out on the hat, I was sort of disappointed by. I go, no, cut back to the flat and show the two of them planning to travel back in time. Like, this is what I want from this end. Not something that's, oh, let's just be very old together. And it's just like, oh, that was disappointing. Mm. I really felt that, like, willing something in the city. If you do this, I will love you. And then it lets me down. And that final shot.
They might have been torn. They might have been torn about this ending, because I assume, and that's maybe my final question. So was this the final Indiana Jones adventure? Because when you decide that that is the last one, and probably Harrison Ford has said so, even though with some actors sometimes doesn't mean anything, he might still be doing Indiana Jones at 100. But is that the final one? Should that be the final Indiana Jones movie after what we've seen? Matt, how do you feel about that?
I think the only way I would want another Indiana Jones film would be if it was a Charlie Kaufman movie that was really very strongly meta, very strongly thematic about mortality. Basically, Synecdoche, New York meets Indiana Jones. That would work for me. I do not want another Indiana Jones film with an old Indiana Jones, because the last two already didn't convince me that they know what to do with that character very well.
So if it's just more of that, no, because I was sad after this film and I didn't want to leave an action blockbuster feeling sad. So if anything, give me something that really works with that, plays with that, is perhaps consciously sad, but does something else. I think something much more meta and self-aware, and that's not going to happen. So, yeah.
No, I think ultimately this, although there's a lot I like about this film, it does raise the question, what is the point of a film with an old Indiana Jones? Like, if you're going to watch Raiders and say, I really enjoy this film, what should I do? I would consider, well, create a blockbuster format that recreates those thrills. That seems to be the first port of call. Rather than, let's take this character and show him as an old man. I think that has diminishing returns when it comes to storytelling and is not really a story that suits a blockbuster. And then you get this sort of faux nostalgia. I mean, I don't like the actor that plays Salah, so him turning up, I don't like. But also, I don't think it works even narratively. I think it's trying to say, oh, you love this person, we'll put them on screen and you will love that moment. And I don't think blockbusters do that very well. I think the action blockbuster formula wants action and excitement, not necessarily twee nostalgia. And with Indiana Jones, bringing him back now, unless you have something really interesting to say about an old action hero, which I don't think they do, you're ultimately just going to get a slightly slower moving action film and lots of bursts of daft nostalgia and sort of slightly cringe nostalgia. And yeah, just if you don't need to make it, and I think they were saying before it came out that Harrison Ford is like, this is absolutely the last. I think its box office is going to guarantee it is the last, to be honest. Where I would go is, if you love the original trilogy, don't take continuity and characters from it. Take what you loved about it and see if you can tell a new story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would say I left the theater happily in a way, again, because my expectations have been lower. I had enjoyed the ride. I was also semi-sad because I felt it was, in a way, also a sign that this kind of filmmaking somehow doesn't really work anymore as well as it did back in the 80s, including, you know, of course, I'm always listening to scores, and John Williams did another Indiana Jones score for this. So obviously there was also nostalgia about this, but also the sense that this kind of sound, this kind of film is also a thing of the past. They're trying to imitate something that was there and worked really well in the past, and that has to have a certain end. You can't overdo this just for the fans or for the audience that are there. So I did feel that was semi-sad.
But, you know, there's almost like the relationship of Raiders with the stuff that it's ripping off. I mean, there's an element like they struggled to get that made because people were like, those old movie serials, that's a type of storytelling that's dead. You know, you can't do that anymore. And that's, they had struggles getting the money to make Raiders of the Lost Ark because people thought that was old fashioned. I think you want someone to come in and go, okay, those old Republican serials, they were naff on a level, but there was something exciting about them. And we found a way to tell that as an 80s blockbuster. And I think that's what they did. I hope that there will be people who can watch that type of 80s blockbuster and they'll go, okay, let's make that fitting the way films are now. I think there is that scope for reinvention, or I'm hopeful there's that scope for reinvention. Mm-hmm. But I think it's telling that when they made Raiders of the Lost Ark, they cast the hottest guy at the time to be the lead. They didn't go to the Republican serials, find someone aged 50 or 60 or even 70 and say, you were great then, let's make Raiders of the Lost Ark with you in the middle of it. You know, it that sort of old man thing, it just doesn't work. And I think they're so stuck with the nostalgia. They're so in love with the nostalgia that they bring all this stuff back. And what you want is the ruthless, you want the young, ruthless Steven Spielberg and George Lucas that were like, right, this is what's great, screw the rest, and let's just make a fun film.
Will they be able to do that in the future? That is a very, very good question. Any final thoughts on Indy 5, something that our listeners should take away that we haven't yet talked about?
Yeah, I think if you go and see it, definitely adjust your expectations. It will definitely benefit from lowered expectations. Honestly, I would say if you really like Indy, go back to Raiders of the Lost Ark. That's one I can keep rewatching every time it feels fresh, because it is just a fresh, fantastically crafted film. I think anything that came after, there's some good stuff in the second and third film. There's probably some okay stuff in the fifth film, but none of it tops the original for me. So just go and watch Raiders, and if you don't like it, just, you know, then you deserve Indiana Jones 4 and 5.
I mean, watch it as maybe a footnote to Raiders. And it's a more interesting footnote than Crystal Skull was, but it's not. Don't go thinking you'll see an amazing film, but I think it's a curio that's worth watching. And I was entertained in the cinema, so I can't be too harsh on a film when I'm entertained by it, even though I can see its flaws. So I think, yeah, it's definitely, I'd say, worth a watch, but I'd then put brackets with a few caveats after that recommendation.
Well, I would say go watch it. I do recommend it as a standalone film. Enjoy it for what it is. Don't compare it too much with the others, which obviously is unavoidable. And listen to the score. What I did after the film, I listened to the score about 3 times in a row, you know, just doing whatever. And Williams did a great job. It was a bit truncated and underused, I think, in the film, and sometimes lost in the sound effects and everything else. But it's a nice way of reimagining the film, maybe in a better way. That sometimes happens to me with soundtracks. I listen to it and actually the film in my head is better than what I've seen on the screen. So why not do that? And next thing you could do is listen to an upcoming episode where we talk a bit more in depth about the collaboration between a certain Spielberg and his favorite composer, John Williams, in one of our Summer of Collaborations. So anyway, thanks, Matt, and thanks, Alan, for talking, agreeing, disagreeing, doing whatever with Indy 5. And hopefully our listeners will join us for another episode. Thanks, Matt. And thanks, Alan. And bye to our listeners. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.